Buddhadeh, Srimati Bhakti Vranta Swamini Janamane, Namaste Saraswati Devam, Gauravani Bhacharani Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatari Sitarane. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 15, Text 30, in the chapter description of Mystic Yoga Perfections. Okay. It's always gratifying when the verse that comes up is the same one that you studied for. Okay. Madhvibhutir Abhijayan. Shri Vatsastra Vibhutsita. Dvajata Patra Vyajanai. Sabaveda Parachita. Madhvibhutir Abhijayan. Shri Vatsastra Vibhutsita. Dvajata Patra Vyajanai. Sabaveda Parajita. Madhvibhutir Abhijayan. Shri Vatsastra Vibhutsita. Vajata Patra Vyajanai. Sabaveda Parajita. Others? Students? Mut, my, vibhuti, opulent incarnations, abhijayan, meditating upon, Srivatsa, with the Lord Srivatsa opulence, astra, and weapons, vibhushita, decorated, dvaja, with flags, Atapatra with ceremonial umbrellas. Yajanai with different types of fans. Sa, he, the devotee yogi. Bhavet becomes. Aparajita, unconquerable by others. Translation and purport by the disciples of Srila Prabhupada. My devotee becomes unconquerable by meditating upon my opulent incarnations, which are decorated with Srivatsa and various weapons, and are endowed with imperial paraphernalia, such as flags, ornamental umbrellas, and fans. Purport. The imperial paraphernalia of the Lord's opulent incarnations indicates his omnipotency, and the devotees become unconquerable by meditating on the Lord's powerful, royally equipped incarnations. As stated by Bimalamangala Thakur in Krishna Karnamrita, verse 107, Bhaktis Twaya Strittatatra Bhagavan Yadishad Daivena Na Palati Divya Kishora Murti Mukti Swayam Mukhi Vatanjali Sevate Sman Dharmarta Kama Gataya Samaya Pratiksha. My dear Lord, if we develop unflinching devotional service unto you, then automatically your transcendental youthful form is revealed to us. Thus liberation herself waits with folded hands to serve us. And the ultimate goals of religiosity, economic development, and sense gratification patiently wait to render service to us. Om Jnanata Vrandasya Gananjana Salakaya Chakshur Navitamena Tasma Shri Gurave Namaha Vanchakopa Jubhischa Kripasindhu Bhivacha Patitano Pavani Bhyo Vaishnavibhyo Namo Namaha. So we're continuing this chapter about the mystic yoga perfections. And as we get towards this end of the chapter, we see a shift from just describing some of the mystic powers to more and more how the real purpose of any type of yoga system, including the mystic yoga perfections, is really to obtain devotional service to the Lord. So this is being described more here. When I was reading this, I noticed there's sort of two parts to the purport, a little bit different ideas, and I was kind of trying to see how they fit together. The first part is really talking about how the devotee is unconquerable because the Supreme Personality of Godhead is unconquerable with all of his paraphernalia. Then the second part, this quotation from Bimalamangala Thakur, talks a little bit more how the devotee is always under Krishna's care and everything comes to the devotee by the mercy of Krishna. So the ideas are actually quite closely related. In other words, the common element here is the devotee is always under Krishna's care and protection. So first it's described the devotee is unconquerable. The verse here says, Sabhaved Aparajita. The one becomes unconquerable, devotee. Now, how is this? How does the devotee of the Lord become unconquerable? Is it because they have gained so much power? They're like Arjuna, who can defeat anyone in battle. Actually, the devotee is unconquerable because Krishna is unconquerable. And Krishna's devotees receive the same benediction from Krishna. And the devotee is always under Krishna's protection. And thus they become unconquerable. Now, the word here is mentioned, is given. It says that the Lord's opulent incarnations indicates his omnipotency. So what does omnipotency mean? You know this word, when we have the prefix omni, which means all, right? Like an omnivore is someone who eats anything, right? Okay, so omnipotency, obviously potency or power. So omnipotency means that Krishna is all-powerful. Actually, I was thinking about it and noticed that Prabhupada often in his purports uses three omni words together. Think what those are? He often describes Krishna as omnipotent, which is all-powerful, also omniscient and omnipresent. Many times these three are put together. So Krishna is all-powerful, omniscient, all-knowing, and omnipresent, He is everywhere. So we can see how Krishna is omnipotent in many, many ways. He lifts Govardhan Hill. Prabhupada often gives that example. He was able to expand himself into 16,108 husbands of the queens in Dwarka. He creates and controls whole universes, floats planets in the air. You got to be pretty powerful to do that, right? You know, he transforms matter into spirit. This is one example of omnipotence he probably gave. It's kind of interesting. Transforms matter into spirit. And one of the ways he shows that is through the deity form, the Archiviguraha, who appears to be material elements but is actually completely spiritual. Who can transform matter into spirit other than like than Krishna? He also, all of his senses are interchangeable. He can, Prabhupada says, he can eat with his eyes. How does he do that? Krishna, I'll put the plate in front of him. Krishna glances upon what is the bhoga, then becomes prasadam, and enjoys. So he can enjoy anything with any of his senses, anyway, anywhere. So definitely Krishna is omnipotent. And nobody has, he's called Bhagavan, of course, he is all-powerful. He has all opulences within him. What about omniscient? Actually, it's described as omniscience is the samvit, or the chit potency of the Lord. That's his omniscience, to be able to know everything, that he is full of all knowledge. There's an example that in when Narada Muni went to Dwarka, he was observing Krishna, and of course Krishna's activities throughout the day, and one thing he noticed, that Krishna knew the hearts and the minds of all the citizens of Dwarka. He knew what everyone was thinking. Why? Because Krishna is within the heart of every living entity. And this also goes a little bit into understanding this idea of omnipresence, that he is present everywhere. He may be situated in Vrindavan performing his pastimes, but at the same time, and this is, of course, his amazing abilities, he's able to be everywhere throughout the universe, throughout all the entire spiritual material universes, and as the Paramatma, within the heart of every living entity, as his Brahman expansion, his spiritual energy expands through and permeates the entire universe. So Krishna is everywhere. He knows everything, and he's all-powerful. And because of this, he's able to give all protection to his devotees. So his devotee also becomes unconquerable, as is he. We can see so many examples of this throughout. You don't have to look very far throughout the Srimad Bhagavatam to see how Krishna gives this protection to his devotees. One famous example, of course, is Ambarish Maharaj. For a very slight offense, Durvasa Muni cursed him. And he traveled and he was chasing Ambarish throughout the universe. And of course, Ambarish went to Lord Vishnu, Lord Narayan. And then what happened? Durvasa Muni got to be chased around by the Sudarshan Chakra for a while. So Krishna, you know, because there was some offense to his devotee, Krishna responded very, very strongly. He does not tolerate this. He's always giving protection to his devotees. Of course, Prahlad Maharaj, the world's greatest demon, Hiranyakasipu, who had conquered the entire material world. He'd conquered Indra and all of the demigods were afraid of him. And he attacked his young son Prahlad, 5 years old, and tried to kill him in so many ways through poison, elephants, fires, throwing him off a cliff. What else? Snakes? Yeah, okay. Anyway, lots of ways. And what happened? Krishna protected him at every moment and finally came out of the pillar as Lord Nrisimhadev to kill Hiranyakasipu, to kill the great demon who was harassing his pure devotee, Prahlad Maharaj. So the devotee, knowing this protection of Krishna, always takes shelter of him. And he has that firm conviction. In the Hari Bhakta Vilas, and this is quoted many places, such as in Chaitanya Charitamrita and Majjalila, there are 6 symptoms of surrender. And we won't go through all of them, but you know, that's the verse there. It's Anukulyasha. How does that one go? Anukulyasha. That one. The third line of that is, thank you, is Rakshashatita Vishvaso, which means the conviction that Krishna will always give protection. That's part of surrendering. When we actually we say, surrender to Krishna, what does that mean? One of the symptoms of that surrendering is really actually believing, having faith that Krishna will protect us at all times. And you know, it's not just Prahlad Maharaj or Ambarish Maharaj, these great devotees that lived thousands of years ago in the Bhagavatam, which we can hardly relate to because they seem like they're almost in a, well, they are, in a whole different world and a whole different historical time than we are. But what about devotees today? Do we experience protection of Krishna? Yes, actually, devotees experience this many, many times. They printed up a little book in Mayapur about all these stories the devotees, present-day devotees, had written about Lord Nrisimhadev giving protection, right? So there are many, many examples. I have my own story of Lord Nrisimhadev, but I've told it many times. I won't go into it. I have another story of Lord Nrisimhadev that Radhana Swami told me. And this is when the terrorists attacked Mumbai. Did I wake everyone up? This is the attention getter. Okay. About 30 armed, dangerous terrorists attacked the city of Mumbai about, what was that, 5 years ago? A few years ago. And they were like, they had machine guns and grenades, and they were attacking different places. They were in hotels. They were attacking. And there was one devotee who was a policeman. He was a policeman in the army. I'm not sure what. But anyway, he was sent out there to try to stop them, to fight them. And they were actually not doing well. The terrorists were overwhelming them because they just had more weapons. And so they were up in this hotel where the terrorists were up on a balcony and the police or the army who were down below. And they threw these like smoke grenades or smoke bombs or something. So the whole place was filled with smoke and they couldn't even see. And then they started shooting down at them with machine guns. And the devotees were, not the devotees, the army people were all getting killed. Well, there was this one devotee with his gun. He was standing there, and he couldn't see anything. He's like, how do you protect yourself? You can't even see where it's coming from. But strangely enough, not strangely, by the Lord's arrangement, he had on his telephone, he had a ringtone, was the Nrisimha prayers. Tavakara Kamala. So either, I don't know if either he activated or someone was calling him or they were trying to get a hold of him, but it was, so, you know, so the Nrisimha prayers were playing. And finally, the shooting stops, the smoke clears, he looks around him, all of his other fellow policemen were all killed. And they had left then, and he looked up, and right in front of him was a big pillar in the foyer of the hotel. So he understood that while Lord Nrisimhadev had come out of the pillar to save Prahlad Maharaj, Lord Nrisimhadev, because the prayers were being chanted, put a pillar in front of him to save him. So these things happen. This was told to me personally by Radhana Swami, so I'm sure it's true. You know. Anyway, wonderful story, and there's so many more where we can see how Krishna gives protection to his devotees, not just 5,000 or 100,000 years ago, but actually even today. So, the devotee is not fearful in any condition of life. Bhagavatam 6:17-28 says, Narayana parasarve na kutaschana bibhyati svargapavarga narakeshu apituliyarta darshina. Devotees solely engaged in the devotional service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead Narayana never fear any condition of life. For them, heavenly planets, liberation, or the hellish planets are all the same. For such devotees are interested only in the service of the Lord. So the devotee is fearless. Krishna promises his protection. He says, Sarva Dharma Pritya. This is Masuja. Do not fear. If you surrender, Sarva Dharma Pritya, give up all varieties of religion, surrender unto me, his promise, Masuja. Do not fear. I will protect you. So, what does the devotee do in time of danger? We turn to Krishna. We have the example of Prahlad Maharaj. He didn't even actually turn to Krishna to save him. He just chanted Hare Krishna. He just remembered Krishna, and Krishna saved him. And this is a very advanced devotee. We really shouldn't dictate how Krishna will protect us. Krishna, do this for me, protect me in this way. Advanced devotee simply surrenders and Krishna will protect him. So that's the highest principle, is to remember Krishna and expect his protection. But of course, practically speaking, it's natural that we want to preserve the body. It's that we're in this material body, the identification is so strong that it's natural that we're going to want to protect the body. And you use your intelligence. You don't go out in the road, stand on the highway, and say, Krishna will protect me from this truck coming down the highway. That sounds foolish, doesn't it? It is foolish, because Krishna has also given you intelligence. Krishna gives you intelligence on what to do and what not to do, how to take care of yourself. And why should you protect your body? Well, of course, we're all attached to the body, number one. But even if we weren't so attached to the body, if we were very advanced, we would also want to protect this body because it's Krishna's body. And it's meant to serve Krishna. While we're in this material world, this is the instrument that we have. This is our tool, so to speak, to serve Krishna. If I don't take care of the body, if I let myself become very weak or very sick or whatever it might be, or not take care of myself, then how can I serve Krishna? So, it's natural that we want to preserve the body. Even Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur talks about in his commentary on the Anyavilasita Shunya verse. He describes this. He said it's natural in a time of great peril a devotee would think, "Oh, Krishna, save me." He says that's natural. There's nothing wrong with that. Of course, I mean, it's better than not thinking of God, obviously. So, in other words, this is natural because the attachment is very strong. But the even deeper perception of the devotee is to simply depend upon Krishna, to simply want to serve Krishna, regardless of, as it says, if he's in heaven, hell, or whatever the situation might be. Anyway, don't stand on the road expecting Krishna to save you from the truck. That's your takeaway for today. You know, so we use our intelligence, and we need to preserve body and soul. Sometimes we have to plan our lives accordingly. Like sometimes some of the students, you know, we did this career counseling course, you know, and we talked about what you might want to do as a service or as a profession and what you have to do to get there and what you might have to do, go to college. So how does that fit in? Well, we have to intelligently make plans sometimes, and we need to actually think about how we can serve Krishna well. And sometimes that means having certain facilities. We also have dharma. We also have occupational duties that we do in this life. We may have to... There are devotees in this room who are running businesses, devotees who have jobs, who go to work every day. They have professions because this is what they need to do to take care of their family. But at the same time, the devotee understands whatever we receive is up to Krishna. Whatever we get, whatever material facility is up to Krishna. Sometimes it comes, sometimes it doesn't come. It's up to Krishna. Many of us have had that experience. So not only does Krishna protect us, but he provides what we need for the service. This Bimalamangala Thakura verse is rather interesting, because he talks about liberation waits with folded hands, as well as religiosity, economic development, sense gratification. These four items are called the purusharthas, or the goals of life. So it's described that in the material world, people have four goals of life: sense gratification, economic development, religiosity, and ultimately, when one's frustrated by trying to achieve those, liberation. So in this verse, he is saying those things aren't really so important. They simply, if one is a pure devotee of the Lord, they simply serve the devotee. So what does that mean? Does that mean then that devotees get all everything they want, that we get all the sense gratification, economic development? They're here to serve us. I'm a devotee, so bring it on. Well, this is, sometimes people in different religions have this attitude, you know, that, you know, Prabhupada would say, they say, think God is my order supplier. Whatever I want, I pray to God, God give it to me. It's not like that. You may have heard of, there's this Christian sort of movement, it's called prosperity religion or prosperity gospel. And they believe that if we serve God or pray to God, that we'll be rewarded materially. And God wants you to be wealthy, and one of the signs that you're really a good servant of God is to show how wealthy you are. So many of these ministers and pastors do become quite wealthy, thus showing their great faith in God. But no, it's not really quite the way it works. They call this the positive confession movement, that God must answer your prayers. He's obligated It's kind of karma my mom says, isn't it? You know, you do your work and you have, and you, God has to give it to you. You know, so they call this the name it and claim it movement. Some of the distractors call it the blab it and grab it movement. You know, because what they're really doing is replacing the idea of faith and devotion, behavior, even personal character, you know, just with this idea of positive thinking. God has to give me whatever I want. So for a devotee, we don't think that way. We know that we may receive benedictions, we may receive wealth, we may not receive wealth. Basically, we understand Krishna will do what is beneficial for my advancement in devotional service and the surrendering process. Very, very nice verse that I like. Well, it's actually three verses from Majjha Lila, 22, 39 through 42. Okay, it's a little long, but I'll read it. Krishna says, if one engages in my transcendental loving service, but at the same time wants the opulence of material enjoyment, he is very, very foolish. Indeed, he is just like a person who gives up ambrosia to drink poison. Since I am very intelligent, this is Krishna saying, and we know he is the most intelligent. He's not bragging. He is the most intelligent. We've already established that. He's omniscient. Okay? Since I am very intelligent, why should I give this fool material prosperity? Indeed, I shall induce him to take the nectar of the shelter of my lotus feet and make him forget illusory material enjoyment. Whenever Krishna is requested to fulfill one's desire, he undoubtedly does so, but he does not award anything which, after being enjoyed, will cause one to petition him again and again to further fulfill desires. When one has other desires but engages in the Lord's service, Krishna forcibly gives one shelter at his lotus feet, where one will forget all other desires. When someone engages in Lord Krishna's devotional service for the satisfaction of the senses and instead acquires a taste for serving Krishna, he gives up his material desire and willingly offers himself as an eternal servant of Krishna. This is Krishna's trick, right? In other words, the devotee may have material desires. We have all these different desires, but we want to serve Krishna. You know, we were talking, this was covered in some of our verses the last couple of weeks about mixed devotional service. We still have some material desires, but Krishna gradually takes those desires away so that those desires become lessened and the desire to simply serve Krishna becomes stronger and stronger. So Krishna provides benedictions to his devotees, but those advanced devotees have the right attitude about that. And there are a couple stories I want to tell about that, that describe that, that are in the Srimad Bhagavatam in the 10th canto. And actually, they're both about a devotee's named Sudama. You know that? We all know Sudama Brahman, but remember the other Sudama? Who was the florist? The garland maker. His name was also Sudama. So we have two Sudama stories here. The first Sudama was in great poverty. I'm giving you the short version here due to time. He was in great poverty. He and his wife were suffering materially. His wife said to Sudama, please, Krishna is your dear friend, because they went to school together, right, in the ashram of Sandipani Muni, which actually I just saw 2 months ago. It's in Ujjain. We were there at our JBC meetings, and we got to go visit the ashram of Sandipani Muni, where Krishna, Balaram, and Sudama Brahman learned. It's a very, very beautiful place. It really is. Very, very nice. Very nice atmosphere there. Anyway, so old friends, Sudama and Krishna, from Gurukula days. So he says, okay, I'll go ask him, you know, I really don't want to, but, you know, I know that my wife's really suffering, I should do so. And his wife says, well, you have to give something, an offering to Krishna, so here's a little chipped rice I made, puts it in a bag, sticks it in, you know. And so he goes and sees Krishna. Krishna, amazingly, is like, worships him practically as a Brahmin, my dear friend, my great Brahmin, please. And he serves him. He and Rukmini are serving him there in Dwarka. And he's just feeling such incredible, wonderful bliss in his relationship. You know, it's like he doesn't even want to, you know, Krishna's like in a total opulence, like a great king, and he's got some little bag of chipped rice. So Krishna knows this, of course, being omniscient. Remember, Krishna being omniscient, knows everything. He grabs the chipped rice out of his pocket and says, oh, you were hiding this from me. And he starts to eat it, you know. And and enjoys it so much. What was I going to say? Here was a nice line. Oh, when Sudama was, when Krishna ate the chipped rice, Rukmini said, "This is more than enough. He only let him eat one bite. O soul of the universe, to secure him an abundance of all kinds of wealth in this world and the next. After all, one's prosperity depends simply on your satisfaction." So Rukmini was saying, you're going to possess everything. Krishna, the more if you take too much of this, there's a lot of different explanations by the acharyas of this, but basically she's saying, okay, that's enough. Otherwise, the goddess of fortune will be completely beholden to you. But this goes back to the point of our verse today and by Bibhulabhanga Thakur that economic development, prosperity, all these things are simply waiting upon the devotee. So because the devotee is serving Krishna, all of these things will come. And it's actually a fact. He was awarded great wealth. He went back to his house. It turned into a palace. He thought he must be in the heavenly planets. He didn't even recognize his wife. She was as beautiful as the goddess of fortune, it was said. Finally, of course, he did recognize her. And they had all material wealth. But then Shukadeva Goswami continues in the story. He says, "To devotee who lacks spiritual insight, the Supreme Lord will not grant the wonderful opulence of this world and material assets. Indeed, in his infinite wisdom, the Lord well knows the intoxication of pride caused by the downfall of the wealthy." Now, Sudama did not have that pride. Sudama knew how to, we could say, handle the wealth that he was given. Because it says, "Thus firmly fixing his determination by means of his spiritual intelligence, Sudama remained absolutely devoted to Lord Krishna, the shelter of all living beings. Free from avarice, he enjoyed, together with his wife, the sense pleasures that had been bestowed upon him, always with the idea of eventually renouncing all sense gratification." It's from Bhagavatam 10.81, 36.37. So in other words, he still had the mood of renunciation. He was enjoying sense gratification or pleasure in this material world, but he wasn't attached to it. He just knew gain and loss come by the will of the Lord. There may be pleasure, whatever it is. Krishna's giving me this. He remained fixed in his devotional service, and he realized someday I'll renounce this, which, of course, he was able to do, being a great renounced devotee. So we discussed this idea about it yesterday, Dharmaraj was reading from the third canto of the Bhagavatam, so Kardama Muni, was it? A very nice purport, long purport that Prabhupada gave about that there may be some pleasure, even enjoyment, in this world. Right? That may be there. But the devotee's not distracted by this. It's not the primary thing. It's secondary. There may be enjoyment, there may not be enjoyment. The main thing is our devotional service, is bhakti. So we remain fixed in that, and at the same time, Krishna may award one certain benedictions or benefits or certain facility that one sees that, okay, this may be favorable to my service. There was the second Sudama. When Krishna and Balaram went to Mathura, they visited many places. They visited a washerman, right? Where they wanted some clothes, and he says, "No, you can't have these clothes. These are Kamsa's clothes. Get out of here." Krishna didn't take that too favorably, did he? And I think he became liberated at that point. Then he came to Sudama the florist, who was making garlands. And Sudama the florist was so happy to see Krishna Balaram. He offered so many wonderful prayers praising him. And he knew, knowing the mind of Krishna, he gave him his most beautiful garlands and put on him. And because of that offering of those flowers, Krishna benedicted him so much. Here's the benediction he gave him. Oh, no, first he said, "I will give you any benediction. What do you want?" Think about if Krishna came to you and said, "I'll give you anything. What do you want?" You might think of all kinds of things that might be nice to have, right? I mean, Krishna can give you anything. So Sudama, here's what he wanted. He chose unshakable devotion for Krishna, the supreme soul of all existence, friendship with his devotees, and transcendental compassion for all living beings. Wow. Pretty nice, huh? But Krishna said, "No problem. I can give you that easily. But and because you're so humble and surrendered, I'm also just, by the way, going to give you, in addition to all this wonderful transcendental thing. Strength, long life, fame, beauty, and ever-increasing prosperity for your family. So he got it all. He got everything. He did not want anything materially. He only wanted these spiritual benedictions, but then Krishna says, yes, of course you can have those. And I'm also going to give you these material benedictions. In the same way as he did with the other Sudama Brahmin, because these surrendered devotees would not be distracted by that. They would be facilities for their service, not impediments. And of course, this is reminiscent of probably the most famous example, Prahlad Maharaj. Lord Nishinadeva offered him any benediction. Please take something. And Prahlad said, 7:10:4, you are so kind, your devotee, that you would not induce him to do something unbeneficial for him. On the other hand, one who desires some material benefit in exchange for devotional service cannot be your pure devotee. Indeed, he is no better than a merchant who wants profit in exchange for service. So the devotee's never thinking, I'm doing this to get something, but he has full confidence that Krishna will take care of me, whatever the situation. Actually, Lord Nishingadev kind of pressured Prahlad Maharaj, you have to take a benediction. So what did he ask for? I remember. There were two. I remember the one, but I thought there were two. The one was he wanted his father, Hiranyakasipu, to be forgiven, right? Here's the biggest demon who tried to kill him. He says, please forgive my father. Wasn't there another one he wanted? Nobody remembers. Okay. I thought there was a second one, but I do remember that, you know. But that just showed his character. The only benediction I want is, you know, please forgive my father. Okay. So as we develop our mood of surrender, we realize that Krishna is our only shelter. He's working in our best interest, even if we don't see it all the time. And the devotees see that everything is coming from the Lord, and whether good or bad conditions come, they're considered special mercy. They're, we might say, learning opportunities, right? We have these learning opportunities you have in school, you have in life in so many ways. So Krishna gives us learning opportunities. In the verse about the six symptoms of surrender in Prabhupada's purport in CC, he says, situated in everyone's heart, Krishna deals differently according to the living entity's position. The living entity's position is to be under the protection of the illusory energy or under Krishna's personal protection. When the living entity is fully surrendered, he's under the direct protection of Krishna, and Krishna gives him all intelligence by which he can advance in spiritual realization. So even in the neophyte position, we can take shelter of Krishna. When one takes shelter of the spiritual master, following the instructions of the spiritual master, one is under the internal potency of the Lord. One is under this direct protection of Krishna, and it's never ordinary karma that happens to a devotee. I gave this example before, but I think it's appropriate. The difference is if I have a ball and I throw it against the wall, it bounces back to me. According to the specific angle I throw it, it's going to come back at, you know, some angle. I don't know. How does that work? My daughter, Jai Shirad, explained that once about the angles of the...
Reflection.
Called reflection? Fraction? Something. Reflection, refraction, one of those. Anyway, it's a scientific principle. Anyway, it's going to mechanically come back a certain way to you. Now, on the other hand, that's karma. Action and reaction. Now, if I throw that ball and someone catches it and throws it back to me, that's Krishna karma. That's the internal potency. That's how Krishna acts. In other words, it's still coming back to me, but it's coming back personally. Krishna may throw it hard, may throw it softly, so many ways. It's coming directly. That ball is coming back to me from Krishna, rather than just mechanically coming back according to whatever my input is, that output will be back in a mechanical way, which is the way karma works. So this is Krishna's great kindness. He will give us what we need in this material world. He will reciprocate with his devotees. And all of these material assets become the servant of the devotee of the Lord. And at the same time, Krishna will help us to spiritually advance and surrender in this path of Krishna consciousness. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. So I think our new word now is reflections. Also known as questions and comments. Yes.
But we're doing things for ourselves, but we're doing things for Krishna, and it's kind of a mixed bag.
Yeah.
And the verse you quoted, you said that Krishna will help us gradually not want those things anymore. So the question is, do we have to consciously ask Krishna to help us to gradually not want those things, or does he do it automatically? Because sometimes we're not ready to give up those things.
That's true, and I guess my answer would be that Krishna works that purifying process to the degree that of our desire, to the degree that we surrender, the degree that we want it. If we really don't want it, Krishna's like, okay, because Krishna basically gives us what we want. Of course, if we're chanting Hare Krishna steadily, regularly, every day, like 16 rounds, we're saying, dear Krishna, dear Radha, please engage me in your service. So that's what he'll do. He'll try to engage us in his service. So if we're just performing the processes of bhakti according to the guru's instructions, then Krishna will work to purify us. I would say the rate of that will be dependent upon our desire. What we want. So we have some influence on the process, yes.
Thank you.
Okay. Anything else? And then
This quote that's in the purport from Bilvamango Thakur, sometimes devotees don't get what they are seeking, you know, materially.
And yep.
Sometimes Krishna takes it all away.
Yep.
And oftentimes when that happens, there's a crisis of faith. There's an example of one devotee that just prior to the centennial, he visited over 500 devotees that had stopped practicing Krishna consciousness, and that was a common denominator in all of them, and they couldn't really process the distresses that were coming their way, and it shook their faith. So my question is what can we do when there are reversals that create mental disturbance?
That's a really interesting point, because I was thinking when you said that how it had disturbances or problems in their life and that had caused a crisis of faith. But we could also say if one doesn't have sufficient faith, then those setbacks will cause problems. So kind of which comes first, you know, because that is part of having faith. Understanding that whatever happens is Krishna's mercy. It's coming from Krishna for some reason. And of course, we can, that's a whole another class, but there's so many reasons why Krishna will put the devotee into situations of distress or suffering. I did a seminar on this once, and basically I found that there, in our scriptures, I found four different causes of why we're put in distress. One is for pastimes, like Haridasa Thakur being whipped in marketplaces. I think it's very instructive. It's probably not my situation. As far as all my suffering is a pastime, except my own pastime in this material world. The second is as a learning opportunity, as a way to surrender. The third is it's simply the winding down of our karma, just like, you know, the fan, you pull the plug, that there's still some residual amount of suffering just being in this material world that we're going to have. But the difference is kind of like, you know, the ball example I gave, that it's been handled directly by Krishna, you know, rather than just mechanical. And actually Vishwanath also gives, he also says that sometimes it's Krishna's special mercy or special arrangement with the devotee, and sometimes he wants to just show an example for the world of his devotee, and also that, and the devotee's not exempt from the suffering material world. But I think the main thing is that Krishna is helping us to surrender. And Vishwanath gives the example, of course, I'm sure you've probably all read, of the parent. And the parent will sometimes give sweets or something nice to the child, and the child very much enjoys that. And if the child is sick, the parent may give, he says, bitter neem juice. Well, I guess that's medicinal, but neem juice is very bitter. So the child likes the sweets the parent gives, but doesn't particularly like the bitter neem juice. But in either case, the parent is equally loving, equally caring, right? Because it's working for the best interest of the child. So in the same way, the Lord is always working for our best interest, and sometimes we experience that, oh, we're getting, you know, all the four purusharthas, you know, at our beck and call, giving me so many things for my service, and sometimes we experience the bitter neem juice. Sometimes we experience that it's a little bit painful or pinching a little bit, or maybe some suffering. And so we try to understand that Krishna is equally loving in both situations, that Krishna is doing what is best for me, for my surrender. And if I simply remain fixed in Krishna consciousness and continue my faith in Krishna, then there will be a good outcome, at least spiritually. There will be a good spiritual outcome in that our faith will become stronger, our devotion will become stronger, and our surrender will become stronger. But if we don't realize that, then we may have a crisis of faith.
Just a reflection, you know, devotees that have been through many tests, they look back and they see sometimes that their growth is accelerated tremendously during the test period. Yeah. And they reflect back on it, so that deepens their faith.
And that's a real good point. We don't always understand Krishna's plan at the moment it's happening. In fact, you're saying, why is this happening, Krishna, please? You know, it's like, why am I suffering? And then sometimes, as you said, sometime later we may understand. Yeah. You know, because sometimes I think about some times in my life that I realize how much I learned spiritually from. Like, you know, once when my van was stolen, you know, my camper was, in fact, I was actually in it sleeping while it was being stolen. Very strict, yeah, by some very dangerous thieves. And so, you know, that was quite an experience, a little bit distressful time, but later I just had all kinds of reflections, understanding about that. And I remember other times when, like, relatives have passed away and things like that, which at the time, you know, certainly are not happy experiences, but sometimes you gain so much insight and realization from them. You know, one of our God sisters wrote a book. I don't know if it ever came out or not. You know, and she was going to title it something like When Bad is Good. And she was compiling, and that was her theme, all of these stories of devotees when something seemed like it was a very negative experience in their life and later turned out to actually be beneficial to their spiritual life. So these things happen, yeah. Okay, probably one more. Oh, I'm sorry. And I forgot in the back. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. You were telling Nishinga stories, and I thought of one that happened a good long time ago, and it didn't happen to me, but it was one of my favorites. It was in South Africa. There was a car accident, and a little devotee girl, about 6 years old, got thrown like hundreds of feet or up in the air and down quite some distance from where the crash had occurred. And by any normal standard, when they went over, they expected her body to be shattered. And they took her to the hospital. There was nothing wrong at all. No broken bones, barely any bruises, just a scratch on her arm. And she told that Lord Nrisimhadev caught her and set her down. And he said, see, he scratched me right here. It's even in the police report.
That's a wonderful story. Thank you. That's amazing. There are a lot of stories like that.
I was thinking sometimes Srila Prabhupada, in his purport, he writes about his own life, not directly saying it. He said, sometime Guru needs to do more writing and translating. Disciples should release him from management. I'm thinking, who is talking about? He's talking about himself, because he expressed another purport similar. Mm-hmm. And then Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur gave a comment also that sometimes Krishna purposely put Guru as a Sikh get sickness, mm-hmm. so the disciple can serve.
Mm-hmm.
And he gave an example of Madhavendra Puri.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Madhavendra Puri could not even get out from his bed. He was past stool and urine. And Prabhupada gave a whole summary that how Ishwar Puri, his disciple,
mm-hmm.
Became contagious with his love of God due to that service.
Yeah.
So many reasons. And then another example also in the 10th canto, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur gave commentary that if the devotee, Krishna sees that he or she needs to purify the heart at this moment in life to get out of this some strong attachment,
mm-hmm.
and he doesn't want to do it, then he give him sickness.
Mm-hmm.
If he does not take voluntarily austerity, mm-hmm. he will get sickness.
Mm-hmm.
So everything in devotee's life maybe it doesn't appear good, but it's actually in hand of Krishna. It's so nice from the background. It's so sweet, the loving nature of Krishna.
Those are wonderful examples. And I think that's probably one of the most important ways that we can make advancement in Krishna consciousness, or that we can try to understand Krishna consciousness, is by trying to see the hand of Krishna in everything we do, whatever happens to us, whether it's distress or whether it's happiness. And even if we don't see it at the moment, to have faith that it's there. You know, and if we develop that faith, it's very, very powerful. And Krishna will certainly reward us. Okay. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.